And so today we are talking about how to claim your freedom. So, of course, then there's the issue about, well, what's freedom? And it's not just to have whatever you want or say whatever you want or be whatever you want. Starting at the beginning of this chapter, Holmes says that this spiritual life that we're practicing and learning about is the next greatest religion. And now you have to remember that this talk was happening in 1950s, and he died in 1960, I believe. And so it's a long time ago, and he'd been writing and preaching, talking for 30 something years before that. And so this is the next greatest religion. It's being created from science and philosophy and religion. It's a very practical religion. There's no dogma. And I don't know why I'm telling you people this, because everybody here already knows this, but it's a review. And so we're going to do it. That religion in general is becoming less materialistic. It's not dualistic. There's God. God is all there is. You can't quite cut God in half and say, well, this part's good, this not. That just doesn't work. So the dualism, there's a becoming an understanding that we're all of this creative process, this creative mind, a creative intelligence, this creative force, source energy, whatever it is you want to call it. It's all of that, and we are living in it. We are of it. We are breathing of it. Oh, and there's a joke. What did the green grape say to the purple grape? Breathe, breathe. And yeah, that's a lot about what Connie was saying. Breathe. Oh, yes. And so, well, this is less materialistic, it's not dualistic. And as Holmes says, theology, it gets over its superstition. And that one of the big disappointments of his life, apparently, was that there's no hell. What a bummer. Now, where do we send people who disagree with us? It's just like, I love seeing that. That's just so human. Yeah, where do I send people that disagree with me? But anyway, so this religion and this focus of today is about freedom, how to claim your freedom. But it comes with concepts of how do you help yourself and others? How do you prosper yourself and others? And prosperity meaning being successful, thriving, growing, and how to make yourself and others happy. He refers to Norman Vincent Peale as being so generous, and that encompasses that generosity is it comes from comfort and safety and confidence and joy and a sharing that you give credit wherever credit's due. You recognize other people's successes, other people's prosperity, recognize as people are happy, recognize what's going on. And if I am I claiming something that, well, the fact is I have to share it because I didn't create it all myself. And then I share it. This generosity of spirit. And that was something that Holmes gave quite a bit of text space to and made a big impression on him, because he thought very much of Norman Vincent Peale. And so there's a statement of how do we be free? He said, the truth shall set you free. Well, what's the truth that's going to set us free? Well, one truth is that we are all individualized expressions of God, that we are individual infinities. But in this practice, we don't teach fear, we don't teach superstition, that we have minds and we think. And so if it's all God, then there's two big concepts. One is the presence, and that is what we live within. We are it. It's all the same stuff, just individualized. And we see different things, we can hear different things, we smell different things, we have all of this, but it's just all the same creative source. There's that, there's the presence. Not another really good word for that. And then the power, and that we live within the presence, And but we live and breathe within this power. It's a creative power, and that we all have access to all the time, of course, by na our nature. So, and he talks about that if somebody says, well, so and so is just a natural healer. No, it's not the person who's a natural healer. There's functioning within this presence and the power that comes with it. And now he speaks of a Dr. Ryan in North Carolina, and that work this person has done with parapsychology and ESP and things like that. I need to say that nobody within 30 decade or 30 years after that guy did his work, nobody could replicate it. So that bit in this chapter, no, that doesn't stand. Apparently, he had some, there were questionable behaviors on the parts of assistants and things like that. So there's no way it couldn't be replicated. Anyway, moving on. So, talking about what we are, who we are, what we are, how we work, we live within the presence and the power, and we get to do things from that. And so it's not about, when we talk about prayer, it's not about what we're praying to, it's about what we're praying from. What are we creating from? And it talks about that individual belief, like I believe this, is not the answer. People can believe anything. But he says, you know, people can come up with, I'm holy and saved, and you're not. What we designate as being sacred is sacred, and that's not. But how can anything be not sacred if it's all the same creative force? And so we're dealing within this amazing, awesome presence and power. And what is sacred? It may be that it's a feeling that we have, but a thing, but it's a feeling that we have when we experience certain things. And so religions tend to hold on to old concepts and then apply them now. And that's not necessarily useful because then you get involved with science and science gets involved with awe. Like, whoa, look at this, like the James Webb telescope. And now they're talking about, they thought and they hoped that James Webb would be able to show us the first star in the universe, the oldest star, the very first one. It turns out it can't quite see that. But the next telescope they're working on, oh, what's her name? Nancy Grace Roman is what it's called because she was an early astronomer involved in the space programs, and she's dead now. But anyway, she was important, and so the next telescope, the Nancy Grace Roman telescope, the next one is maybe going to see the first star in the universe. Whoa! Of course, it's taken a billion years to get to us so we can see it. But anyway, that's pretty amazing. And so we're dealing with science as we get involved with what we believe. And so science brings the awe and the curiosity. And as people reject specific things about set religions, we end up with a whole lot of people who have rejected all the dogma and rejected all the things that they don't like. And now we got a bunch of individual spiritualities and opinions. Well, that's not, no, that's sort of like people can believe anything. But when we get us people together, like what we have here, we get some common understandings, a perennial philosophy, a perennial beliefs, the ones that are inclusive and just continue and hold up no matter what. You get into a prayer group of that sort. And now you've got people who are believing together and kind of vibing together. You get to a deep and abiding peace and stillness together. And it's, I've heard it said that God's first language was silence. And there. So, life is living. Holmes says we're playing with a stupendous possibility. And oh man, having the power to live, why will ye die? And I'm not so sure that he means the body dies. I'm thinking it's about, are you, if you're not living, yeah, I don't remember where that's from. If you're not living, get busy dying, or get busy living, or busy dying. And so, what we're about is revealing as we go along a revelation of ourself to ourself, and then what it is that we can contribute to others. There's where we're into the helping ourselves and helping others. And it can be a physical help, like you don't have enough food, oh, here, I'll help you get some more food. It can be that very primitive survival level of the body, helping each other, but it also can be helping each other in a realization and a revelation of our individualized selves to our own selves, and then how we contribute to others. And there is that power that responds to our consciousness. And as he says, as Holmes says, I am surrounded by love and by friendship. I am love. I am friendship. I give and I receive and I believe it. And this is true now. Whoa, that's your consciousness. That's where you are living from. Boy. Now this concept of a steady, clear mind can hold an affirmation of acceptance. This is where I'm living from. And understanding that there are things going on in the world that I over which I have no control. I did not make this. It's creative force created everything. And so there's a lot going on that I can't do a thing about. I didn't make this. I didn't make this world. And so be it. So there's this level of an affirmation of acceptance. It's a calm, clear, some people would say radical, that no matter what I accept, doesn't mean I like it or condone it, but it just is. And there's something just is in the world, and that's the way it is. And once you get that, once you can relate, release the, oh, I have to change things, I have to do something, you know, once you realize, okay, some things I can't change, it's just the way it is. Doesn't mean I'm copping out. It just means that some things, like I cannot just declare this is done. So be it. This road, I don't like this road. This is bad. It splits the town in half. Get rid of it. No, it's not going to happen. Okay. So I stop fighting with reality about things that I really cannot have a whole lot to do with. Oh, and that reminds me a little side trip here about grief. There's a lot of it, my impression is that right now in the consciousness, there's a lot of grief. A lot of people are absolutely devastated by what's going on politically with this administration. And I think we need to, I heard recently somebody comment that sometimes people are grieving about something, and what it really is a feeling of guilt. We have to separate out what is sadness, grief. And what is this guilt that I should have been able to do more? I'm terribly sad, but I should have been able to do more. I should have been able to fix this. I should have been able to help this person. I've got a personal story about that. My spouse had a thing going with her brother who had a congenital issue. And while Lynn ended up in foster homes, the brother, and she thought he was in foster homes, but he wasn't. He was institutionalized. And years later, she found him and he asked her, why did you leave me? And she's been dealing with that grief ever since. And now realizing she was a child, there's nothing she could have done about that. Nothing. And separating out what's grief and what's guilt, where we're just, our heart is twisted in a knot over something. If we can separate that out, what we can do something about and what we just cannot. We can be sad, yes, and grieve over things. But if we tangle in the rest of this guilt stuff, it can stretch out over our whole lifetime and never resolve because we're just confused about our feelings and what's really having an impact on us. So it's important to give time for grieving if that's what's happening. Go ahead and do that. It's a natural feeling and emotion. We just don't want to get hooked into other things and really have, you know, there's something else. So we have to be clear about the difference between the two and give time to the one and not be dragged down by something else that we really didn't have any control over. We couldn't do a thing about it. Or if we could have done anything about it, we just need to get clear on that. And for whatever reason we couldn't or didn't, and forgive ourselves. Do that forgiveness work and let that go and just we let the sadness and the grief be all there is to it. So, Sometimes we get to choose. Do I really want to get spun up about something? Really? We can choose how we respond to things. Life is made to live, and to song is made to sing and dance to dance, and we just get to be glad and be happy. And there is a freedom in all of this that nothing can stop me, as Holmes says, from loving you. Nothing can keep me from being glad. And regardless of what's going on in the world, the confusion or wars or whatever, I can still have a peace of mind. Now, Holmes mentions that he was at the INTA Congress in New York City for 2 weeks and had to get away every day, sometimes for a couple of hours, to put himself back into himself, to regain the equilibrium, the joy, peace of mind, balance, and poise that was inside of oneself. And those things can be, as he said, dragged apart. Walt Whitman, he quotes as saying, you have to take time to rest and invite the soul. There it is. And when I was learning about religious science, it was all about the five steps of treatment and affirmative prayer and treatment and have a clear intention and that, you know, our intentions are a demonstration of our outcomes, or our outcomes are a demonstration of our intentions. And there wasn't a lot of emphasis on the real foundational need underneath all of this, which Connie amply demonstrated in her opening prayer. There is the foundation. And there is, I wasn't hearing a lot of that early on. And now here we hear it from Connie, big time and in living color. Holmes was teaching Christians and Jews, and the focus was on oneness, which is a very interesting and new concept for those folks back there 100 years ago. And so there was a teaching that we are of presence and that we function within the power. That was a massive shift back then and for the following decades. And there was a focus on affirmative prayer. And now we understand that and we know it, and we can really turn a focus onto the foundation under all of that. That, as he says, here is the cause of all creation. In you and in me is the possibility of all joy. Here's the freedom we've been looking for, and we shall never find it outside. Never. Love, and you shall be loved. The more I love, the more I'll be. And that is the freedom. And he says that Tolstoy said, we have freedom within the laws of inevitability. Within the laws of inevitability, if we are in alignment with this presence and power of this creative force, there's where the freedom lies. We have the freedom to be happy, so why not? And if we're depending on what how other people behave, that means we are projecting our inadequacy on them, even our fear. And so we have the freedom to be at peace, to be poised, to be calm, to be well and prosperous. Now, 75 to 90% of all disease is related to emotions and stress. And I checked that, and they're still saying things like that. And so we can't ignore poverty and ignore the reality of life, but we have the freedom to be happy. There are stories of people in concentration camps. One woman that actually went back there because she had freedom and happiness no matter what. So during World War II, she went back into a concentration camp in order to teach the other people there to die with dignity and to have the freedom of choosing how they were, regardless of what was happening to their bodies. So this is extraordinary that we have the ability to make up our mind. And Emerson talks about the independence of one's solitude. Loving reveals kindness, compassion, tenderness and sympathy, unity and togetherness. And that's how, while we care for ourselves and claim that freedom, we also care for others because in the consciousness and how we are, it spills over. And so we can talk about contemplation. I've heard it said that you can gaze on something for quite a while, just a gentle gaze on whatever it is, a flower, a child, a lamp, a rock. And after a while, it starts to kind of shine. And we get a conscious appreciation. And practices of this sort create growth and transformation. We're not the same person as we were before when we start conscious appreciation for everything around us, everything and everyone. And the world needs that revelation of what is. And what is that power, the presence, and the power. And that's within our deep, true self. It's in an image of creation, and it's all sacred, which means nothing and no one is lesser than. So biases, rage, anger, hatred, judgment. No. Instead of feeding off what somebody's cranked up about, we don't need to be. Now we get a choice. We can either join in on whatever it is they're all angry and upset about, and then egg them on because it feeds, or we can stay steady and calm and in peace and happiness. And by us being steady and calm, it spills over and they can calm down as well. There's a cooking show where some fella, chef, goes in to help people straighten out their restaurants, save their restaurants. And they say, and so often, over and over again, if the kitchen manager is yelling at people and mad and impatient and all the rest of it, it affects everybody in the place. And he will even say, if the head chef in the place can stay calm and steady, then everything gets calm, steady, and competent and happy. Everybody has a good time doing what they're doing. It spills over in a small space like that and in life in general. And we can have a compassionate intelligence. What helps calm things down? We don't, you know, there's that standard for medical people and others as well. Do no harm. Do no harm. Don't help other people spin up. Just if we stay steady and calm and happy, yes, there are things that certainly deserve being upset about, but we don't have to be sucked in. We can make a choice of how do I respond to this? Not just that I'm going to lose emotional control and be mad and upset and grieve all the time because of I'm being devastated by whatever. We can make choices with a compassionate intelligence. What helps things stay calm and clear? This outer world and our inner mind are all interrelated. People talk about a monkey mind. Bing, 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 bing. Other people talk about it's like having a wild elephant in your house, in your head. No, they're breaking the furniture and it's not house trained. So we want to learn to be clear. We want to learn to be steady in our minds, stay steady, that we have control of our minds. And so how do we do this? Well, he touches on it. That it's about a calm mind, meditation, mindfulness, having some control of our mind. Then you get a perception of the pure natural mind as a sacred world instead of being all about anger and negativity and things like that. This thing with going on with Diddy, Puff Diddy, there's an example of the opposite, an insatiable pursuit of power and money, sex and control. And look where, whoa. There's the opposite of a calm, clear, natural mind in a sacred world. And so, meditation and mindfulness training, practicing on a routine basis, choosing to stay present and conscious. There is the freedom. There is the connection. There is the living within the presence that allows us to create, to have intention from. As a way of life. If we don't apply what we learn, if we just leave today and go about our life the same as always, well, then there we are still. But if we learn how to, as Holmes put it, about going to that Congress in INTA. If we learn how to practice putting ourselves back into ourselves, then we continue practicing being attentive and not being just jerked around by whatever. We learn to be clear and steady and practice doing life differently from however it was we grew up, when whatever happened was what reacted us and then we act. We learn to be steady, calm, clear, happy, and of service to ourselves and others, and to prosper as well as others, to be successful and to thrive and grow, and to be happy and to help others be happy. Thank you.